With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
My next guest, David Harkin, is an award-winning filmmaker, a qualified youth worker with the Education Authority Youth Service in Northern Ireland, and a media facilitator specializing in film in and media. But that's not what I got him on. I've got him on because he's written a fascinating book called How James Bond Saved My Life. It's been described as a unique self-help memoir, and it's a journey through cinemas delving into the significance of role models in the cinema. I'd like to say that joining me live on the line is author of How James Bond Saved My Life, David Harkin. David, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you. So explain, I mean, first of all, title of the year, I think, thus far.
Thank you.
Congratulations on that one. Just tell me a little bit about yourself, because I was reading my notes, and you, when you were a child, you were nonverbal.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I was nonverbal. I was in speech therapy, actually, up until I was a teenager. And I had a lot of difficulty at school because of that. This is back in the 1980s, of course. So it was a sort of different kind of educational landscape back then. The culture was very different. So it was very frustrating sort of growing up back then in Northern Ireland, too. I know amid the troubles and things like that. But yeah, I was nonverbal up until I was 5 years old. So I sort of fell in love with cinema. Probably due to its visual sort of aspects of it, I would say.
All art, for those who don't do sport and don't do sort of, I don't know, joining at school, all sorts of art are always the sort of, if you like, we'd call it a safe space now, wouldn't we? A sanctuary, somewhere that you can either forget about yourself or look at a way of getting your handle on the world. Is that a fair description of what happened with James Bond and you?
Yeah, I would say so. I think it's like sort of like modeling behaviours that I would describe it as. I think that when you see a sort of charismatic character on screen, or you see someone that's cool, especially if you're young and you're facing challenges like being bullied or having difficulties and challenges with not speaking, I think that when you see someone cool on screen, you want to sort of model that behaviour. And I think James Bond, he's a cool guy, charismatic and stuff, and he's very action kind of orientated. And I think when you see someone like that, you sort of model that behaviour. You want to sort of instill that coolness within you, I think, so, particularly when you're young and impressionable.
Sure. And also, because there's always this narrative, isn't it, that your childhood years are these golden, rosy time. And actually, when you're a kid, and until you get to teenage, and that's another kettle of fish. But it can be incredibly sort of painful. And there is bullying, and it can be a really hard ride. And for you, as you said, with doing speech therapy, kids can gang up, and they did.
Oh yeah, they did. Sure. I mean, the bullying. I mean, I mentioned in the book. No, and I'm very honest in the book, I feel, about the bullying, because the bullying was severe that I faced. And I think it was, from their point of view, I think it was a misunderstanding, because I think when you're different as well, when you're young, I think that can sort of instill fearness in others. And I think when you're young, that sort of that translates into bullying. When another child is afraid of someone being different, of not speaking or speaking correctly in their eyes, they can sort of translate that into bullying. So, I was very aware too when I was at school that I wasn't the only one being bullied. It was so common. It seemed like every other person was being bullied for whatever other difference that they had. As you say, I mean, childhood is sort of, they always say your school days are the best days, but I would argue that myself. I think everybody has sort of travels on a different path, and everybody's story is unique to them, I think, as well.
And also, this is taking place was it Derry you grew up in?
Oh, in Derry, in the north of Ireland, yeah.
Yeah, so there's should we call this an interesting situation going on there between, the 70s and the early 80s?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it's one of the things too in the book that I talk about too is that sense of identity, because when you're growing up in Northern Ireland, even today as well, there's still that conversation of, are you Northern Irish? Are you Irish? Are you British? You know, and even the name Derry, some people would call that Londonderry, and even saying that would reveal a part of your identity by saying Derry or Londonderry. So seeing James Bond, of course, and you're sort of taking on a new identity. So it's sort of that whole essence of identity becomes very important. If you're growing up in Northern Ireland during that period.
And so, why Bond? Because, you know, there he is, sort of Secret Service. Why not sort of Batman or Superman or you know, one of the other heroes of the silver screen?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, they're all cool too, I think, and I do mention them, but I think particularly for me, for someone of my generation, I think that when I was growing up in the 1980s, this is way before the Marvel days. This is even before the Michael Keaton Batman film came out in 1989, so there wasn't really much choice in terms of sort of screen heroes. All we really had was, there was the Star Wars films, and there was the... What else was back there too? There was Indiana Jones films, but they were only a couple of films, and they were sort of glued to the sort of Christmas TV schedules. Whereas James Bond had a back catalogue by the 1980s of over a dozen films, and I think that he was just more prevalent. He was just more visible on screen, you know, compared to Star Wars and Indiana Jones and things. And so I think James Bond sort of was the candidate because he was so visible. He was so accessible, I think. And also too, he was so cool. I think that's another thing too about James Bond too. I think you may talk to another person who might like Batman or Superman, and I think it's whatever strikes a chord sort of within you. It's whatever connects to your personality, and I think James Bond connected to man. Well, I think whereas somebody else, it might be Superman or Batman.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, isn't it? Because, okay, I mean, you got Superman in the 70s, same time as Star Wars starts to come out. But up until that point, they were all kitsch, weren't they? All cartoons. That we hadn't had the Marvel thing or the whatever universe
exactly,
they're in. And as you said, and also, because if you're looking at cinema of the 70s, it's gone from that sort of 60s and 70s. It's cinema is introspective. It's the anti-hero, and so you need somebody who's a bit fantastic, and I mean that in the words of, you know, in a fantasy world, but that anchors it completely in the real world, which is sort of, I suppose Bond sort of does.
Yeah, 100%. As you say, I mean, in the 70s, we had no Taxi Driver and all these sorts of things. We had Jordan and Travis Bacone.
That would be an interesting watch in Derry, wouldn't it? Let's face it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I think James Bond's more of a safer bet. And I think, as you say too, he has his qualities are very sort of, it's something you can connect with. You know, he's a man, and he's, and also that father figure type thing as well. And I think that with somebody who is sort of grounded in a real world, particularly too, I think at that era too, was with the kind of Roger Moore films. They had that fantasy element, and I think that really helped too. That sort of otherworldly, sort of skiing off the mountains and hanging on the helicopters and jumping at airplanes. I think that sort of fantasy thing was a shift from the sort of real world of being bullied at school and stuff. I think that fantasy world was a sort of outlet for the sort of trauma that I had been feeling at the time.
So. And at the same time, you're undergoing speech therapy. So, how did you sort of hang your growth onto? We're presuming it's the Roger Moore Bond at this point.
I would say so. I think at that time, you see, I think that it's like we're saying about the Star Wars films. I think that the Roger Moore ones. I think just the fact that otherworldly thing, that's, as you mentioned about the fantasy sort of kind of element, I think that really was something that I sort of latched on to. I think because it was so different from the world that I sort of knew, because the world I knew was a sort of silent world as well. Mm. It was a world where I was sort of isolated as well, and I sort of felt alone. And at that time, too, my parents, their own relationship was breaking down and stuff. So I sort of felt very alone in the world. And I think seeing James Bond, who's also kind of alone as well in the Bond films, but he also does all these cool things. Mm. And I think that was something that I sort of latched on to. Something that I did sort of hang my hat on. I thought, right, I want to be like this guy. And that sort of, just that escapism of sort of switching off the real world and switching on to a sort of fantasy world, I think that really helped me a lot. And it did sort of save my life. It sort of saved me mental health for definite.
How did you watch the film? Did you go to the cinema? Because in these days of streaming and everything else, I could call up a film on my mobile phone. But if we're talking 80s, presumably, unless you had a VHS and kids ask your parents, but it's a question of physically going to the cinema. And again, you know, there is that warm enveloping. You know, as a cine nerd myself, you know, it is that warm enveloping feeling. feeling of actually walking into a cinema. And cinema is one of the things that you can do on your own. You don't have, nobody looks at you strangely if you go to a cinema on your own.
Well, I think it was a mix. I mean, I do 100% agree with the idea of the cinema. I think even today, too, we still have that feeling of escaping the world and the lights go down and we're enjoying a film. And as you say, too, we can watch it on our own. And I think for me back then, it was probably going with my father to the cinema, but also, too, the sort of appointment viewing that we had back then where we could sort of watch the film. No, oh, it's on Saturday night. It's on Saturday. No, and it was the talk of the playground or the talk of the house and stuff. It was like a sort of watercolour moment where a Bond film would be on at the weekend and you'd be looking forward to it all week. And Bond films seemed to be on quite a bit on TV, but I did see some of them in the cinema, but we didn't, unfortunately, we didn't have a VHS player until much later. But I think it was a mixture of going to the cinema and escaping that sort of world or into that world. And also the sort of appointment viewing on TV and stuff. And we were lucky enough too, they also sort of, because of Republic of Ireland being so close to us, with the help of a handy coat hanger, we were able to sort of tune in the Republic of Ireland TV channels. So we sort of had more channels as well, which was kind of handy with a coat hanger. If you pointed it in a certain direction, you could tune in RTE2 and RTE1.
Yeah.
So they would show multiple films a lot. So you sort of had a lot of choice back then.
Did you keep this to yourself? I mean, you didn't walk around the place, you know, saying, oh, by the way, I have decided that I'm going to model myself on James Bond, because that would, you would have been in a hiding to nothing, as the saying goes with
it. No, it was something that it was only years later that I sort of realised this, when I was talking to a therapist. It's something I mentioned in the book as well, that when I was mentioning all this to a therapist, the therapist sort of, it was like I was talking to a mirror. She kind of reflected back to me and said, you know, James Bond saved your life. And when she said it to me, it was as if all the dots sort of connected up and I realised, oh yeah, this is true. Because everything that I was talking about to the therapist was about modelling behaviours and sort of taking on a thing that I call the Bond model, a sort of way to escape the world where I would pretend to be cool and pretend to be aloof and stuff. And the therapist was sort of saying, you know, what you're talking about is you're kind of taking on the behaviour of a cinematic role model. And as the therapist was talking to me, I realised, oh yeah, this is true. It was sort of like a flashback I had as I was talking to the therapist, and I realised that everything that I had done up to that point, there was a sort of road back to it, and all the roads led back to James Bond. So it was very interesting. It was only really years later that I sort of realised that it was as if I sort of knew it in my head, but I needed someone else to tell me it. So it was very interesting.
And, you know, you're a filmmaker. You're an award-winning filmmaker, and congratulations. But, I mean, this is obviously, that exposure to cinema and Bond has again put you on a path that, you know, you must look back and think, if I hadn't found Roger Moore or I hadn't found Bond, then, you know, I wouldn't be the person that I am today.
Oh, 100%. I think that is something that, since speaking to that therapist, I have reflected on, because I have thought, yeah, that is right. All these things. And it is true that your life sort of puts you on a path, and it's only really when you're older you think, oh, yeah, this is this, and this is why, and this is that. And I think definitely it did. And I definitely think that James Bond did save my life, because it did definitely kind of set me on a journey. And I think, as you say about this, like even now with young people, I work on film-related projects with young people. Everything that I do is around kind of films and young people. So it's like everything in my life all goes back to James Bond, and as you say, Roger Moore, and that sort of escapist fantasy sort of world. And I think and even now when I work with young people, I'm always asking them, what sort of films do you like? What is it that sort of flicks a switch within you? Because it's something that kind of interests me a lot, because I think everybody needs that escapism.
This thought just struck me, because you work with young people in film, and when we grew up, if you wanted to make a film as a young person, you had to get a Super 8 camera or stuff like that. And it was film. It wasn't digital. It was, you know, it was film. And yeah. And now, of course, you know, the youth, as we may call them, they've got more editing capability on their smartphones than we ever had in editing suites. So, is there an interest in film, or do the students that you see, or the people you come across in your work, do they understand the power of cinema, and that cinema isn't all about Marvel or you know, these huge blockbusters, and cinemas can be an intensely personal thing, and they can make it on their phones?
Oh, I think one of the remarkable things that I've sort of, in terms of technology first, I think that I've noticed that when you turn up sort of with a big camera, it doesn't really matter if it's not a 4K camera, anything as fancy as their phone, but if you turn up with a big kind of shoulder-mounted camera that sort of sits on your shoulder, it looks very impressive. Even if the quality of the camera isn't that impressive, but the size of it's impressive, I've noticed that still impresses young people, that if you have a big camera, that's sort of, because I think they're so used to cameras being on phones, that when you turn up with something that sits on your shoulder, I think they think, wow, look at this, this is a real kind of movie camera.
Right.
And I've noticed that type of technology, just the mass and size of some, really impresses them when you think, oh, look at my big camera. And I think that the other thing too, that the other part of that is, I think that when they find something within themselves, when you point the camera at them and you say, here's a script, here's some dialogue, and they've created that, and you're sort of seeing the world from their eyes, I think that within themselves, they see a different sort of facet of their own personality. They sort of realize, wow, I can actually act. I actually wrote these lines, and now I'm performing them. And also, too, I think for their own mental health, they can sort of play a different character, and that can sort of relieve a bit of stress that might be hanging on there. You know, if they play a character that shouts a lot or who's angry or grumpy, that sort of can sort of get rid of a lot of anxiety within them, I think. I think that they are still impressed, sort of with themselves, but definitely the camera thing I've noticed a lot, that when I turn up with a big camera, they're, wow, look at this, even though their phones are way better quality, you know, but I think it's the size that really sort of impresses them.
It's funny you say that, because I do a lot of events and press stuff, and you go to these things, and there are a couple of sort of Spanish news organizations, little news organizations, and they turn up with the most outrageous kit, and it's like, you're never going to use this, but the people who are holding the events go, oh, look, they've bought the thing that goes ping, basically, and a load of lights, and so they must know what you're doing, and you there with your iPhone, other things are available, you know, can't be professional, because look at the size of their, you know, etc.
That's exactly.
Why the book? I mean, obviously it's a self-help memoir, but what was the spark that made you want to put all this down?
I think really it was I think the fundamental sort of reason is just to help people. I think that myself as well, like I mentioned in the book as well, that my own son has special educational needs as well. He's awaiting an autism assessment, and I think that really the sort of struggles that I felt now as a child growing up with special needs myself, and then my own son now, I think it's just the thing of sort of helping someone else, and because I work on the public service, of course, helping young people, I think it's just something in my personality to sort of help others, and I think that that's really why. And I think the idea too of writing a book just sort of comes across, what way can I get this message across, what's the best medium to do this in, and I think a book's the best way. I think too, the way of breaking it up into three parts was something that I wanted to do too as well, sort of having a bit about me, a bit about how I found cinematic role models, and then my work with young people about cinematic role models, and sort of breaking up that journey into three parts. I think that's really why I wanted to do it. But since the sort of book's been sort of out there, even just a wee bit, I've actually had messages from parents, just complete strangers on my Facebook page asking me advice about stuff. So I think the book is connecting with people too, because I think the big difference between my time growing up and now is there's such an awareness of special educational needs. There's such an awareness now of the different facets of it and stuff and the different types. Whereas back then it was just sort of, you're this and you're that. It was very black and white world compared to now in terms of awareness.
And so, Which film is it that does it for you mainly? Is it Live and Let Die, Spy Who Loved Me? Because we're talking Roger. Are we talking Roger?
Oh, it's 100%. It would be Octopussy. 100%.
Really?
Yeah, I would do that. I think it's to do more with a TV schedule. I think that around the time of the 80s, that was made in 1983. I think that was shown around the time I was about six. So I think that really kind of struck a chord with me. And it's such a fantasy sort of film, isn't it? No, it's an Indian. He's swinging off great jungle vines and all this stuff. So and he's hanging on airplanes and all. And I think that really, that kind of outerworldly sort of feeling, it just stayed with me, I think. You know, but not 100% Octopussy.
Ah, okay, before it all gets too ridiculously stupid with Moonraker, but there you go.
I think too that the Timothy Dalton ones that followed on from Roger Moore, I think they became a wee bit too serious for me.
Yeah.
I remember that at the time even, that they just weren't as fantasy. I think I really needed that escapism sort of aspect of it. They sort of escaped the real world. I think I really needed that. And only really got that at the time with Roger Moore.
Yeah. What do you hope that people will take from the book?
I think a sense of hope. I think it's maybe a sense of inspiration. That I think too that now that services to help, I know this from my own son, that it's very difficult to sort of see doctors and see specialists, and even to see just any sort of medical professional. And I think that just having someone where you can sort of just escapism, where you can just go, oh yeah, I can just turn on a film, I can just sort of chill out for a while. And I think that it's like one of the parents had said to me, like, that it's such an easy and accessible thing, like you were saying about Netflix, that you can easily just go on there and find something that strikes a chord within you, that sort of flicks a switch within you. And I think that's what I would want, that sort of thing. Oh yeah, I can just watch a film or find a cinematic role model that sort of that might help my son or daughter. And I think that's really what I would want, the idea that it might help someone, that it is accessible. It isn't like you have to ring up and get 50 appointments, or you're on a waiting list for 3 years like my son was. I think that, like with my son, I've sort of put him on a cinema therapy course of just watching sort of Norman Wisdom films, believe it or not. Which has helped him, really, and how my son connected to Norman Wisdom, even though he'd never heard of him. And Norman Wisdom was making films in the 1960s. I think it was the fact that Norman Wisdom's a sort of small man in a big world, and he's sort of taken on the world and within his storylines, and my son sort of connected to that, which I was surprised at, but I was very happy about it as well, because there was a sort of connection that my son found with Norman Wisdom films. And I think that if our children or young people can find that as well, that would be brilliant. You know,
the book is called How James Bond Saved My Life. It is by David Hocking, who we've been to today. David, if people want to get hold of you and find out more about you or the book, do you have a social media page? Do you have a web page yourself?
Oh yeah, well, I'm on Twitter. I'm easy to find on there. David Hocking, author. I'm on there on Twitter. Easy enough to find.
Super. And you'll be
able, anybody wants to find me.
And you'll be able to download, you'll be able to order the book by our own virtual bookstore. The book is called How James Bond Saved My Life. It's by David Hocking, who we speak to today. David, thank you so much for your time today. I'm going to play out with my favourite Bond track, which is from The Spy Who Loved Me, because I always remember getting to see that in the cinema with a group of friends. David Hocking, thank you so much for your time
today.
It
was a pleasure. Thank you.